Joining us now, one of our great friends of the show, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
This piece from the National Review, it's a lengthy piece, but it is incredibly informative. You shared it with us yesterday. We wanted to go through a bit of this as they lay out with this George Floyd murder trial. It is a charging nightmare. Let's start here though, Jeff O'Brien, from your expertise of being a lawyer, what is the most interesting part of this for you? What is the most intriguing part of this whole trial moving forward? What are you keeping your eye on?
Well, I would say the issue that, you know, we're dealing with right now, this interplay of the Mohammed Noor case and the Chauvin trial and this third degree murder charge. I don't know if I've ever seen a case where you have the one of the key legal precedents in the case kind of up in the air at the moment, with the appellate courts, you know, with the Court of Appeals saying that the third degree charge should be reinstated. But at the same time, Mohammed Noor's attorneys are appealing his case to the Supreme Court. I understand that Chauvin's attorney is going to appeal the last week's decision to the Supreme Court. So I guess it's all coming up to the Minnesota Supreme Court as to whether or not it's appropriate to charge a police officer when the person in custody dies under third-degree murder statute. And like you mentioned, the National Review article does a really good analysis of how difficult it is to get anything more than second-degree manslaughter in these situations.
We do a quick refresher for our audience, if you would, as to why the third-degree murder charge in the Mohammed Noor case is relevant to whether or not it should be applied here.
Sure. Well, first and foremost, that was what he was convicted on. He was charged with second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and he was convicted on third-degree murder. It was a first time that's ever happened, right, in Minnesota. And the issue is third-degree murder talks about, a depraved attitude towards human life or taking other people's life with indifference to human life and safety.
Yeah, so like something in the statute reads, and you know, actions indicative of a depraved mind.
Yes, that's right. And the problem is, what they're looking for is that did the officer in question that's on trial do something not just directed towards the person that died, but to, you know, that was showed a depravity towards the lives of others around them. And with Noor, you had the situation of, you know, Justine Diamond came up to the car. He shot without even, you know, doing anything to find out who it was. Or she came up as a dark figure. He shot, right? So it was, and I think his partner was in pretty close proximity too. That's how they got the third-degree murder conviction in the Noor case. Even if they reinstate the third-degree murder charge here on Chauvin, it's really hard. I think the prosecution has a really hard case to make that he was doing anything to show, in, you know, a depraved indifference to human life other than George Floyd.
Mm-hmm. Is there any... Let me go at it this way because I'm trying to formulate my question here. We talked at length yesterday, and we're going to talk with Scott Johnson 1 hour from now from Powerline. He's down at the courthouse, and we talked at length with him about jury selection and the difficulty of, you know, getting, you know, an unbiased juror here in Minnesota, you know, with this being so high profile. And if anybody missed it, be sure you check out the 8 o'clock podcast on the iHeartRadio app, because it really was a fantastic conversation from a lot of different angles. But when it comes to the inclusion of Mohammed Noor, is there an argument to be made that the prosecution here is looking beyond the courtroom? In as much as if they get this charge on Chauvin based off what happened with Noor, then that potentially can influence an incoming juror as they go and make their arguments saying, well, see, look, we gave it to him over here, so we can certainly give it to him over here. Does that make sense?
I think it does. I also see the judge, I think, is looking beyond the courtroom as well, because normally there would be no question that a court of appeals decision is binding precedent on the district courts. So technically, Judge Cahill was wrong when he wouldn't reinstate the third-degree murder charge prior to last week. Well, the court of appeals, that's what they got. That decision was appealed. But I think what he expressed in his statement was, we don't want to have a situation where he's convicted of third-degree murder, and then the Supreme Court weighs in on the Knorr case and says that, that it overturns that case, and now you've got Chauvin's legal team appealing to overturn his conviction. The political and PR ramifications of that would be astronomical. If you get a conviction on third-degree murder and it gets tossed out by a higher court, I can't imagine what the reaction is going to be from those that think that Chauvin should be convicted of second-degree murder.
The circumstances of the cases are so wildly different. You're talking about the Knorr case and the Chauvin case. I mean, Muhammad Knorr was startled by a figure appearing at the door and fired somewhat indiscriminately in that direction, and that's what killed Justine Damon, and shot across his partner, if I remember correctly. I mean, broke sort of every protocol of not just police work, but just, basic gun safety in what he did. Whereas with the Chauvin case, we all saw the video, we all know what happened. This wasn't an incident where, Derek Chauvin was reacting to being startled by George Floyd or anything like that. So I just find it odd that I guess the common denominator is that they're both police officers, but beyond that, there's like so little in common between these two cases that it strikes me as odd that they're using that conviction, as a means to the Knorr conviction as a means to apply the charge to Derek Chauvin, when the circumstances that resulted in the death of Justine Damon and the death of George Floyd are so wildly different.
Well, I agree, Drew, and I think part of the problem is, every elected official in this state has referred to George Floyd's death as his being murdered since the day after it happened.
That's true,
right? And murder is a legal term. It's a crime. There's third degree, second degree, first degree murder. Below that, you drop into manslaughter. So you have Keith Ellison out here as the attorney general trying this case. I understand he was actually in the courtroom yesterday, which is a little bit rare that you have the attorney general, in the courtroom trying the cases. But you have him being brought in basically to deliver a murder conviction. And if they lose, the second degree is going to be very hard, because they're going to try, so at some point, the restraint, they're saying that somehow the police restraining George Floyd pivoted into an assault, because you need a felony to have a felony murder charge and a conviction. So their best shot is third degree, if anything, is third degree murder. Otherwise, they drop down to second degree manslaughter, and it's going to be pretty politically hard to sell if he was brought in to deliver a murder charge and he comes out of this with man two.
That's such a shame, too. I mean, that just speaks to how poorly educated people are when it comes to these sort of things. I mean, you're right. People are going to be very upset, and it's going to be a political issue if they don't get a murder conviction. But if a murder conviction isn't warranted, then there's no reason to get upset.
Right. Well, exactly.
The National Review article on the second degree manslaughter charge, they say if there is a count on which the evidence seems overwhelming, it is a second degree manslaughter charge. For that, the prosecutor must establish that Chauvin caused Floyd's death under circumstances where, one, Chauvin was negligent in a way that created unreasonable risk, and two, conscious that this risk carried the potential of death or serious bodily harm. If the prosecutor's proffer from the evidence is accurate and the jury is rational, Chauvin is certain to be convicted of this charge. The question: where do they land? With regard to what we've been told is a lethal amount of fentanyl in his system. If it's proven that he was going to die either way, because of the amount of fentanyl in his system, where does that lead the prosecution then? With regard to Chauvin, are we back to the second-degree manslaughter charge?
Yeah, I mean, I think we are. I think you're also going to, there's a lot of factors, even with the second-degree manslaughter, I think they're going to come into this. Like you said, the amount of fentanyl in the system, the other fight coming yesterday was whether, you know, going back, the defense wants the judge to reconsider his excluding evidence of George Floyd's prior arrest, where he had you know, drugs on in his possession and had tried to consume them when the police showed up, right? So that you can see where the defense is going with
right.
of pushing the overdose as the cause of the of his death. And the other issue is, you know, this restraint move that Chauvin used. If I understand right, at the time it was an approved maneuver or approved technique under the Minneapolis Police Department guidelines. So even when you get into that negligence standard with Mann 2, the prosecution doesn't have an easy road there either. This is a really complicated case. This is a difficult case. Anytime you have someone who dies in the custody of a police officer, that's not an easy case to prove in terms of at what point did the officer commit a crime. But I do think that manslaughter 2 is probably far more likely to be the count that they convict him on versus a third-degree murder charge. And I think second-degree murder is just pie in the sky.
Talking with our friend of the show, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, just from your perspective, what are your thoughts on what you've seen so far from the prosecution in these moves? I'm just curious, you sort of your observation being a lawyer and what they've tried to do so far.
I think, you know, it's typical. I mean, you've got both sides making a series of motions. I do think that it's a little bit unusual, like I said, with one of the potential counts kind of hanging out there with the possibility the Supreme Court could later overturn it. So I hear that they're going to proceed with jury selection today, barring any, you know, other instructions from the Court of Appeals. So I think they're going to continue to do jury, jury selection with kind of this hanging out there as to whether or not there's going to be another count. So we'll see. It's all a very delicate balance. They're trying to find jurors that aren't biased here. When you have every elected official running around yeah. calling this murder, is hard. I think the real curious point for me is with the massive pressure from outside groups to get a murder conviction here, is the wild card for me is does at some point do the identities of the jurors get leaked by somebody. And then at that point, I think it just descends into mayhem, and probably you have to move the trial out of Hennepin County.
That was going to be my next question. Was, you know, with the difficulty of getting a jury, and with the difficulty that the unnecessary errors that have been imposed by elected officials running around calling this murder, knowing that Chauvin's defense attorneys are going to use every one of those statements, you know, when it comes to jury selection, it feels almost inevitable to me that this iteration of the trial, right, in its current form, in its current location, probably isn't going to go as planned, and we're probably going to have to get a change of venue. But before all is said and done,
where would you go, and who would take it?
Yeah,
I mean, who would want who would want that upon their city?
I know, right? And let me just wrap up with one more question for you, Jeff O'Brien. When we were talking with Scott Johnson yesterday, he brought up the jury pool as well, and he brought up the pressure that as a juror you must feel, knowing that there is the potential for massive unrest, you know, around the city that you know, presumably most of these jurors are from or at least live very close to, and what could happen if it doesn't go a certain way. You know, I'm curious to get your thoughts on that. Is that going to be a major factor when it comes to finding jurors? And is that something that Cahill and other, you know, court officials should be cognizant and aware of and could affect the outcome of the trial?
I think it is a concern. I think they are cognizant of it. You know, I would have had this trial in January when it was 20 below. I wouldn't have done it, you know, when it's warm weather outside, to be totally honest.
Yeah.
But those are the types of issues that end up being the basis of an appeal, right? If Chauvin's attorney believe that he hasn't received a fair trial, they'll appeal and they'll try to get a new trial. And probably in some other county at that point, you know, venue someplace else, if it turns out that something influenced the jury that shouldn't have.
Well, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, I'm sure this is one of many conversations we will be having with you as the trial moves forward. Thank you so much.
Great stuff.
For the time this morning, sir. Really appreciate it.
Take care.